From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. My guest this hour is Charlie Whitmack, the first Iowan to climb Mount Everest. In a couple weeks, Whitmack will embark on his latest adventure, an unprecedented 12,000-mile intercontinental triathlon that reaches from the frigid waters of the English Channel to the snow-covered summit of Mount Everest. At the same time, Whitmack and his team will also be fulfilling global health and educational initiatives that originate in Des Moines. Also joining us, Dr. Yogi Shah, Associate Dean of Global Health at Des Moines University. A preview of Charlie Whitmack's Intercontinental Triathlon after this hour's news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and my guest this hour is Charlie Whitmack. In 2003, Whitmack became the first Iowan to reach the summit of Mount Everest. It was a remarkable ascent of the world's tallest peak. To reach it, Whitmack made two back-to-back summit attempts without food or water during some of the worst weather in the recorded history of the mountain. In a couple weeks, Whitmack will embark on his latest adventure, something no one else has ever done, a 12,000-mile intercontinental triathlon that reaches from the frigid waters of the English Channel to the snow-covered summit of Mount Everest. In addition to being an adventurer, Charlie Whitmack is a lawyer, a husband, and a father. He's climbed countless mountains, ran numerous marathons, and even biked across the United States. Charlie Whitmack joins me this afternoon along with his wife, Kate, from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines. Good afternoon to the two of you.
How are you, Ben?
I am
great.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. Great you could join us. A late addition to our program. Kate, glad you could go on over to the studio and be with us. Charlie, we've talked on these airwaves over the years, also before and after you climbed Everest. It's great to have you again on our program.
Always a pleasure.
In a few minutes, we'll have Dr. Yogi Shah of Des Moines University join us to talk more in depth about Des Moines University's role in this adventure. But first, Charlie, let's talk about the triathlon itself and what you will face when you start this year-long adventure in just a few days. When's the kickoff day?
2 weeks from today, actually.
2 weeks from today. Describe what you're going to do beginning in 2 weeks.
Well, the expedition was an idea that I came up with, Ben, when I was a little kid growing up in Iowa. And I think, like a lot of young Iowans, I ran on the cross-country team in high school. I swam on the swim team, and I worked at a bicycle shop after school. And so as a kid, I loved reading these adventure stories of guys like Ed Hillary, who climbed Everest, and Captain Webb, who swam the channel. And I started thinking, as a little boy, what could be the world's toughest triathlon? And I thought, well, if you could start in the English Channel like Captain Webb and finish on Mount Everest like Ed Hillary and somehow combine the two with a bicycle ride, you might have the world's toughest triathlon.
Had anyone up to this point thought of that? It seems like a great idea, a world triathlon. But
you know, I don't think they had. There are different people kind of trying different ideas, and this is an idea that's been evolving for a number of years. There's three people in history that have both swum the English Channel and climbed Mount Everest. There's one person in history who rode his bicycle from his home in Sweden to Mount Everest and then climbed it. And like academia, adventure kind of develops in the same way, and I think this is the next evolution of that idea.
Hmm. So could you outline the course you'll follow in the coming months to the best of your knowledge? I know there'll be a little bit of impromptu nature to this.
Well, we've developed the idea a bit more to allow us a greater platform to do our educational program. So the expedition begins now in the River Thames, in the Cotswold district of the UK in England, down the River Thames through London to the coast of the North Sea, and then around the coast of the United Kingdom to Dover, and then across the English Channel to France. That's going to be about a 275-mile swim, and nothing like that's ever been done before. From France, then, I'll jump on a bicycle and bicycle across 12 countries in Europe and Asia to Kathmandu, where I meet up with Dr. Sean, our healthcare workers. And then I'll finish the bicycle ride by finishing going downhill to Calcutta, India, dip my wheel in the Bay of Bengal in the Indian Ocean, and then run from sea level there in India about 950 miles up into the Himalayas and then climb again to the summit of Everest.
Is this possible to compare with any this world try anything else you've attempted? I know you're a biker, you're a runner, you're a climber, you're a swimmer. Anything
well, you know,
like
I've been,
well, yeah, go ahead.
I've been training, you know, this for 15 years, and it's been a pretty analytical process. And I started first as a cyclist and working at the bike shop, doing a number of rag-bri rides as a kid, and then ultimately working with Chuck Offenberger on that cross-country bicycle ride with the Des Moines Register in 1995. Then after that, I spent about 7 years training and preparing for Mount Everest, and that culminated, of course, on the Everest climb. And then I've spent about the last 5 or 6 years working on the swim, and that culminated in a 2008 swim around Key West. It's a 12.5-mile ocean marathon swim around Key West, and I was fortunate to make it back to the beach and find out that I had finished first in that race. And so this is something I've been working on for a long time, and I think I've done something similar to each of the legs, and now it's time to just put them all together.
Kate, you and your son, James, will join Charlie on the expedition. You've sold your house and vehicles to help finance the trip. How did you all come up with this idea, Kate?
Well, that's a great question. Actually, I'd say Charlie came up with this.
Okay,
great
so
idea.
Describe the moment. Describe the moment when Charlie came up with this idea and launched it in your direction.
Well, he was very brave in keeping it to himself until pretty much after his first attempt at swimming the English Channel a couple years ago. But after we got back from that, he. After a little bit of time had passed, our son was about 8 months old or so. He said, you know, I got to tell you, there's something I've always wanted to do. What do you think about this? Uh-huh. And at first I wasn't super excited about it.
you're a diplomat, Kate.
Yeah.
All right.
But you know, after I had some time to think about it and we had some other things in both of our lives happen that made me look at the world a little differently. We decided it was, you know, we were just going to put everything we had into it to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And so what will you be doing while Charlie is testing his endurance? You'll have some sort of endurance to be tested as well, too.
Sure. Well, what we are using the Adventure Institute, which is the educational foundation that Charlie created during his first Everest expedition, to disseminate some interesting educational material that students across the country can follow and individuals can tap into. And so part of my effort during this is while also so cheering him on from his with his athletic endeavor, I'm going to also be trying to see some sites and talk to some local people in the places that we're going and put together some interesting videos and blog information so that people can follow along and get a flavor for the places that we're going.
Mm-hmm. How large is the team that will be accompanying you, Charlie?
We've got a team at this point. It numbers actually almost 40 people, and it's just grown and grown and grown. The traveling team is Katie and James and myself, our family, and then we're working with a filmmaker, Andy Stoll, who's from Omaha and Iowa City. He's the former president of the student body up in Iowa City, so people may remember him. He's a Rotary Fellow. And then Brian Triplett, who's a graduate student at the University of Iowa and a journalist who used to work for the LA Times and ESPN.com. So the five of us together will be the traveling team. My dad and his wife are coming along for a bit. My mom's coming along for a bit. And then we've got a couple of doctors that are assisting us through some key parts. Supporting that whole team is Strategic America here in Des Moines, and they're our marketing partner. And they've got a big team there. We've got a web team, and then the whole medical team that Dr. Shaw manages. And then our educational team, which is split here between Des Moines and then also Charlotte, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. We want to get into a lot of those aspects a little bit later in the program, more in depth. Let me ask you this. How long will this adventure take? This triathlon?
It's 11 months. Yeah, we're starting on June 30th with the swimming, and then I'll hopefully be home June 1st of next year.
Mm-hmm. Now, in round figures, what will it cost?
It's a $1.2 million expedition. About 80 to 90% of the money that we're trying to raise goes to the humanitarian portions of the expedition. So that's the global health program and the educational program. And we've been funding them in that order. So the global health was the thing that we felt the most passionately about, and we thought that was going to be about a $600,000 project. And we teamed up with Dr. Shaw and the folks at Des Moines University, and through them with the World Health Organization and the White Ribbon Alliance. And we now have that program fully staffed and ready to go. So we're feeling really happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Just to be clear, this $1.2 million is not the cost of doing this expedition. It's the other things connected with it, the philanthropic
you know,
work.
The, Yeah, we see the expedition as being all those things, and it's a triathlon in sport, but it's also a triathlon in life. And the triathlon, as we view it, is the expedition, which is obviously the least important part, the global health program, which I think is the most important part, and then this educational program here in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So discuss a little bit of the training involved. You said you've been training for this for years, but specifically now in the days running up to your departure. What have you
been
doing?
Yeah, the training right now, you know, in the perfect day, and we don't have a lot of perfect days lately. It's been really busy. But in the perfect day, I'd get up and swim an hour in the morning, have a second breakfast, and then do an hour run if it's a running day, a two-hour bike ride if it's a biking day. Go to the all-you-can-eat buffet for lunch and fill up. And then in the afternoon is a long swim, 2 to 3 hours in the pool. First dinner, and then some yoga or something in the evening, and then second dinner. Mm-hmm. So it's about 5 hours a day during the week. On the weekends are the long swims, and I travel on the mega bus, this dollar bus, to get to Chicago, and I swim up and down the Chicago skyline. So those will get up to be 8 to 10 hour continuous swims before we leave for the swim.
How would you evaluate your physical fitness right now compared to the rest of your life? You best physical shape you've been in ever?
You know, it's a hard thing to think. I've gotten older. I think I'm 32 years old now.
What an old man.
My wife is saying I'm 33 years old. I forget. I've lost track. And it's a little harder to get it done now. So I don't know if I'm in the best shape of my life, but mentally I'm the toughest I've ever been. And I've got the most passion for this that I've had for any project before.
Uh-huh. How do you train yourself mentally for this? I noticed in describing the adventure, you're not putting any ifs or attempts here. You're going to say, I am going to do this.
Yeah, you have to begin with the end in mind, and you break these things down into smaller pieces that seem doable. You know, a single stroke is something any of us can do, and you just have to do those all day to pull off a project like this. So mentally, it is a thing that takes time, and I've spent the last 15 years building mental toughness to be able to endure through times when there's hardship that is difficult to overcome.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back as well and invite questions from our listeners for Charlie Whitmack with us. Also, his wife, Kate, is with us. Where's James, by the way?
James is with his grandmother today down at the park right now.
So you have a portable radio on so he can hear dad and mom on the radio?
Yeah, no? We'll have to play the webcast for him later.
Okay, very good. That's available at iowapublicradio.org, by the way. If you'd like to join our conversation, your questions and comments for Charlie Whitmack and his wife, Kate, joining us this hour, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You can email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. Yogi Shah, Associate Dean of Global Health at Des Moines University. They have a role in this triathlon as well, and we'll find out details on that when we come back. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. It's The Exchange. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're back with Iowa adventurer Charlie Whitmack and his wife, the first Iowan. Charlie, the first Iowan to summit Mount Everest back in 2003. 2 weeks from today, he will embark on the World Tri. It's an unprecedented 12,000-mile intercontinental triathlon, reaching from the English Channel to Mount Everest. At the same time, Whitmack and his team will be fulfilling a global health and educational initiative. Several initiatives that originate in Des Moines. Charlie is with us. Kate is with us as well. A team of medical professionals will join Whitmack on his trip through Nepal, which has one of the highest infant mortality rates in the world. Joining us now by phone, Dr. Yogi Shah. He's Associate Dean of Global Health at Des Moines University. Good afternoon to you, Dr. Shah.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Tell us, describe the collaboration between the World Tri and Des Moines University, your group there.
When I heard Charlie's World Tri wish first time a few months ago, I was extremely impressed by his enthusiasm, his commitment. And I asked Charlie to meet. We met, and I thought of adding global health part of it to his Nepal journey. And Charlie, he must have the same thing in the mind, and he right away agreed. We decided to focus on maternal health, and we have now had quite many meetings between not just our group in to talk about Nepal, but also international groups called White Ribbon Alliance and a Nepal group for Safe Motherhood, and we have discussed detailed plans of doing it.
Mm-hmm. So what specifically will happen during this triathlon? What will your group do? What will you be doing?
Ben, there'll be three objectives we have while Charlie's team and our team will be in Nepal. One focus is to promote school education in most likely 8th or 9th grade girls and boys, to promote concept of safe sex and promote the concept of safe pregnancy. As you might know, and your audience might know, that a lot of teenage girls get married in many developing countries.
Dr. Shaw, I think we've lost Dr. Shaw. We'll try to regain him. Perhaps, Charlie, you can pick up where Dr. Shaw was. I'm sure you're acquainted with
Dr. Shaw is in the excitement right now. He's representing us out in Washington, D.C. at a meeting with the White Ribbon Alliance and with the World Health Organization, so we're really happy he's there. The second two pieces of this, the sort of, it's three levels of training for healthcare workers in Nepal, and at the highest level, we have a very advanced level of simulator that we're taking here from the United States to the hospital, the main hospital in Kathmandu. And we've invited healthcare providers from around Nepal to come to Kathmandu to go through a 2-week workshop with our obstetricians, faculty members here from the United States, that will be training them on some, advanced delivery techniques. The second level of services then is when we actually go out into the villages, and we'll be working in a number of villages around Nepal through the Himalaya, helping the healthcare workers that do the delivery services in these villages do it more safely and recognize when it's a serious enough delivery that they need to seek advanced medical care. And then the third level is what Dr. Shaw was describing just now, which is the school program, which is helping the young people who will become young mothers identify when it is that they need to seek advanced care.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Shaw, I believe, is back with us.
Yeah.
We got disconnected. Sorry about that, Dr. Shaw.
Yeah, actually, I'm in a state, Department of State's building inside, so the reception might be in and out. There was just announcement of the World Food Prize winners, and I was invited to attend that also.
Well, we appreciate you fitting us in, Dr. Shaw. Charlie finished up describing the aspects of the collaboration between your group and the World Tri. Tell us, what do you see as the biggest challenges facing your specific mission, your specific part of the World Tri?
The challenge and excitement at the same time is that the areas where Charlie is going to travel are areas where probably not many foreigners might have traveled, and the Nepali people might not be exposed to outsiders. So the excitement is that they'll be able to listen, hopefully for the first time, the values of safe sex and safe pregnancy. And the challenges would be for them to, for us to translate into Nepali language, for us to connect with them and talk at their cultural values rather than coming from outside and talk about what we know.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that Charlie will have, as a white Midwesterner coming to Nepal with these ideas, do you see some cultural barriers that Charlie will have to tackle in a sensitive way?
Ben, there's always
a cultural barrier, even for me, now, even though I was born in India. If I go back to India now, after having left India 20 years ago, there's a cultural barrier. So what we need to connect, and Kate and Ambika, we have another midwife from Nepal, they understand cultural connections very well, that we need to connect with the teenage girls at their level first before we can talk to them about what we understand as a safe sex and safe education and safe pregnancy. So, yeah, but I think knowing Charlie, knowing his past, and having seen him interact with students, I feel very comfortable that he'll connect with the local people very well. He feels almost, when we had a press conference a few months ago, he feels the Nepali people as his family, and I think that so for him, he'll connect very well.
Charlie, talk to this point, overcoming the cultural barriers.
Well, the reason that we became interested in the global health piece of this and sought out this relationship with Dr. Shah was because it's an area that's very personal to us. Bikal Adhikari is my business partner in Nepal, and he was the gentleman who organized my expedition in 2003 to Mount Everest. And after I had success with the Everest climb, we went back with our friends and family to Kathmandu, and we took a trek into Everest Base Camp. And when we were there, Bikal told us that he was having his first child in Nepal. And so Ambika's his wife, and she had little Apeksha in Kathmandu. Another year passed by, and the family decided they wanted to move to the United States here to provide some better educational opportunities for their children. And they arrived here in Des Moines, and Katie and I were very blessed to be able to welcome them here and help them get settled and find an apartment and teach them to drive and help Ambika learn her English and so on and so forth. And they've really prospered. Ambika had her second little girl here in Des Moines. And after having these two experiences of labor and delivery in Nepal and labor and delivery in the U.S., Ambika became very, very passionate about helping to take some of our science into the field and back to our friends and our family in Nepal. And so we started working on ways to do that. And Ambika had some specific knowledge about that because she had worked as a nurse midwife in Nepal through a government program and had traveled to these remote villages throughout the Himalaya. So our two families sat down together as we were discussing our goals for the next decade, the next two decades, and for our lives. And this was something that had been on our list of things to do. And so it was a real blessing when we connected with Dr. Shah, and we were all thinking the same thing during that first meeting.
I understand that this outreach to Nepal in Nepal has something to do with some Nepalese helping to save your life during your expedition, earlier expedition.
Well, the Nepalese that I speak of frequently is Bikal and Ambika and their family and how they welcome me and how Bikal worked so hard to make my dreams come true of Everest. And I felt, you know, as my brother, it was my duty to help him make his dreams come true. And so we've spent the last 8 years since I was on Everest working on that together.
Mm-hmm. When you go there, will you be paying attention in this triathlon in any special way to your diet, Charlie? Or can you eat pretty much what the particular country offers?
I enjoy local cuisine, and when I climbed Everest in 2003, there were other teams that had, you know, French chefs in base camp and some high-end things like that, and I was with the Sherpas. You know, they were my teammates, and we ate beans and rice and lentils, and I've always enjoyed the local food, and I look forward to enjoying the local food in all these countries.
Mm-hmm. Kate, what do you expect? What is your biggest concern as you count down the days to launch this expedition with Charlie?
Oh, boy. That's a great question. Honestly, I would say,
Kate? I'm going to give you a few minutes to think about it because...
Okay, great. Thank you.
We're going to take a break. You can think about that for a few minutes. We'll come back with Iowa explorer, lecturer, attorney Charlie Whitmack, the first Iowan to summit Mount Everest. In 2 weeks from today, he'll embark on the World Tribe along with his wife, Kate, and his very young son, James, an unprecedented 12,000-mile intercontinental triathlon reaching from the English Channel to Mount Everest. A lot of great philanthropic work, educational work attached to this triathlon. And we want to thank Dr. Yogi Shah for joining us in that last segment. Very busy out in Washington, D.C., Associate Dean of Global Health at Des Moines University. Dr. Shah, thank you very much. And when we come back, we'll ask Charlie more about the World Tri and its mission to motivate and inspire children. It's meant to be an educational tool. We'll ask about that when we come back. And, of course, listen to Kate's biggest concerns as she thinks about those in the break. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. Children's necklaces from Walmart, collectible drinking glasses from McDonald's. In recent months, millions of children's products have been recalled due to high levels of carcinogens. Tomorrow on this program, we look at the potential dangers in these products and ask whether we're doing enough to keep children safe. That's tomorrow, Thursday, on The Exchange. Today, we're talking with Iowa explorer, lecturer, and attorney Charlie Whitmack, the first Iowan to summit Mount Everest back in 2003. And in 2 weeks from today, he'll embark on the World Tri. It's an unprecedented 12,000-mile intercontinental triathlon reaching from the English Channel to Mount Everest. the same time, Whitmack and his team, which includes his wife, Kate, who is with us this afternoon as well, will be fulfilling global health and educational initiatives that originate in Des Moines. If you'd like to pose a question, make a comment, we'd like to have you join us the rest of this hour, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Also on Twitter, IPR Talk. You can find us on Twitter. Give us a tweet. IPR Talk is where you can find us. And so let's go to Kate. Kate, you've had a few minutes to think about this in the run-up to this. Your biggest concerns, you have a lot of responsibility there, of course, mainly to James, who will be coming along, right?
That's right.
And in addition to that, a lot of other tasks you'll be performing. What are your biggest concerns in the run-up to this 11-month journey beginning in 2 weeks?
Oh, well, I would right now, logistics. I spent, Toyota Iowa Dealers Association was very kind in solving our transportation issue by providing us with two great vehicles that we are shipping from Iowa to England and will be using on this trip. But I spent my entire morning, maybe 5 hours, on the phone with insurance companies trying to figure out, how do we get insurance in Kazakhstan?
Does that prove to be complicated?
It is complicated. So, just that sort of issues like that, and how do you pack for a two-year-old who's a picky eater and not toilet trained for this amount of time?
He'll certainly be exposed to a lot of good ethnic food, I imagine.
Right, yes. And one of the other things that I'm working on is I'm looking at the curriculum, doing some research on the curriculum that we're going to be administering in the schools in Nepal. Mm-hmm. So working on that project as well. And we'll continue to work on that while we're traveling.
Talking about one of your sponsors here in Iowa that's helping you out, Joe from doesn't say where he's from. This is an email from Joe asking, do you plan on promoting or bringing awareness about the state of Iowa on your adventure? Joe throws in, good luck, buddy.
That's funny. When I was on Everest in 2003, there was a great joke, and a number of there was a big American expedition there, and they weren't being very friendly, and they were keeping their information very much a secret of weather forecasts and what their strategy was on the mountain, and some of the Sherpas were not pleased with the way the Americans were acting, and somebody pointed to me and they said, "Oh, Charlie's not an American; he's an Iowan." And I had talked so much about Iowa, the Sherpas thought that Iowa was some other country, and they didn't realize it was part of the United States. So I'm pretty much all Iowa all the time for those that know me.
What about that question of promoting? I suppose merely by going there, you'll be promoting Iowa, also this great connection with Des Moines University.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is we're supported by so many people here in Iowa, and this is a project that really could only be possible coming from someplace like this. You know, Katie and I lived out in Washington, D.C. We met at a law firm there where we worked for. And, coming back to Iowa, this was the only place where we would receive the support where we could I could be a normal dad and hang out with my kid after work and work with the Davis Law Firm here in Des Moines. And I felt like be sort of the top of my legal practice and then still have the time to dream about a project like this and start to train and pull it together. So there's no place else in the United States you could do all of these things.
Let's talk a little bit more in depth about the educational aspects here. You created, Charlie, the World Try to motivate and inspire children. It's meant to be an educational tool. What messages in particular do you want to get across and to whom?
Well, the idea for this came right when I first came up with the idea for the triathlon, and I started working on it. So the first thing I did, I was 17 years old. I was a student at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines, and I was in my senior year. I went to Bankers Trust. I borrowed $10,000 to take a trip over to East Africa to take an outdoor wilderness course. And when I went to Africa, I had three goals. The first was to climb Mount Kenya. The second was to sail off into the Indian Ocean in a handmade boat called a dhow. And the third was to trek through the Loida Hills to the base of Kilimanjaro with the Maasai tribesmen. And so we got to Mount Kenya, and we were the first group of students to arrive there to find that the ice that people normally use to climb to the summit had melted, and it was gone. We jumped on this boat, and we headed out into the Indian Ocean, and we arrived at the first island, which is a little island called Tanawe, and we found that we had arrived there a bit too late, because there was a little girl that had died just before we got there from an infection that we could have treated. And so the third leg was we joined with the Maasai then and trekked down through these Loida Hills. And our guide, Simpati, is a Maasai warrior. And on the last week of the trip, he took us back to his village to meet his family and his friends. And he introduced me to one of the little boys. And this child wanted to show me his toys, which were nothing more than a pile of rocks. And he sat there in his little boma, and he arranged these rocks pretending that they were his cattle and that he was arranging cattle, herding his cattle, just as my little cousins here in Des Moines had arranged their toy cars on the rug in our living room. And that was sort of the moment that brought this all into focus for me, that, you know, around the world, we're not any different. You know, Simpati and I were two people that looked very different, but, you know, our kids all have the same dreams. The problem we had between us was just simply that we were disconnected. You know, there were things that these villagers understood at the base of Mount Kenya that if we could share those lessons with our students back here in the U.S., it might really change the way that they live. At the same time, there were things that we knew here in the U.S. and took for granted, and if we could share those stories with our friends in the field, we might actually be able to save their children's lives. So from the very beginning of this, I didn't think of these expeditions as adventures. I thought of them as these tools to make these global connections, these educational connections around the world, where we take what we know here in the U.S. and take it into the field and take what they know in the field and bring it back here to the classroom. So our educational program is focused on doing that, and that's why we're starting in the River Thames now. The Thames was declared a dead river in the 1950s and 60s because it was so polluted there was no ecological life that could survive. There was a small group of environmentalists that came together, and they literally saved the Thames, and it's now the cleanest river that goes through any major city. There's over 320 types of aquatic life that live in the river, including those little seahorses, which are one of the most fragile aquatic species. So with the kids, our first goal is to inspire them, or at least help them identify some of these global challenges that they're going to have to face. The second thing is we want to motivate and inspire them to overcome those challenges. We want to show them it's not as tough as it may seem. And the third thing is we want to help them develop the practical skills that are necessary to have success. Mm-hmm. So the curriculum, it breaks down. We have materials for them every day, which will help them identify global challenges. We'll have a webcast every week, a video from the road that will help give them a bit more in-depth information about the areas where we're visiting. Every month, they'll have a written curriculum, and that's designed to help them develop practical skills. So we actually make the students part of our team, and they help us overcome academic obstacles that arise on the expedition. So
in fact,
the triathlon becomes a big story problem for them.
In fact, I saw a sample, an interesting sample on the website, theworldtry.com, the group is trying to find placement of a tent at a base camp on Mount Everest, and it's interesting to see how many factors you have to consider there.
Yeah, this is something our students had done in 2003, and tent placement on Everest is absolutely critical. So our students, they built these scale models of the mountain. They used the model then to calculate the rate at which the glacier was sliding down the mountain. And then after they figured that out, they had to figure out where the hazard areas would arise, where the crevasses would open, where the avalanches would fall, and where the wind tunnels would form. And then considering those three hazard areas, they advised us where to place our tents so that they would be safe the day the tent went up, and so they would remain safe over 3 months as that glacier slowly slid down the mountain during the course of the expedition. Now, the older kids, they did things that were a bit more advanced. They took the ideal gas law, PV equals NRT, and they used that to calculate the rate of our oxygen at high elevation with changing pressure and changing temperature. The little kids lended a hand as well by taking big piles of equipment and breaking them up into proper size pack loads. And so all throughout the expedition, we called on the students to be members of our team, and the teachers just loved it because the kids really were part of our team, and they knew we were depending on them to stay safe and really to stay alive.
Questions and comments for our guests this hour, Charlie and Kate Whitmack, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, on Twitter at IPRTalk. Here's a tweet for you from Alexan. How far up Everest is Charlie's family planning to go?
Now this is the thing about James and Katie is there are some points of this expedition where James isn't going to benefit from being there. So there are some times when James is going to come home and go back to preschool here in the States, and then he'll come meet up with us again. So he's going to be moving in and out a little bit. Mm. And for those that know anything about Mount Everest, they know it's no place for little James, despite his spirit. And so he'll be sitting out Mount Everest and likely staying down in Kathmandu.
How aware is he, if at all, of what's about to start? Can you communicate this to him in any way at the age of two?
You know, James, he's a traveler. And with my speaking business, I work with 8 speakers bureaus around the U.S. from New York City to Seattle. And so from his first days, you know, he was a traveler. And with my speaking, you know, Katie and James always have the opportunity to come. And so when he was little, he'd traveled with his dad for work a lot. So he enjoys being on the road, and he's a little bit harder to deal with when he has to stay in town for too many days on end. So I think he's going to have a great time.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Charlie, there's always a chance in any of these lakes, swimming that distance, what you say, 275 miles, the swim and the biking, and then also, of course, Mount Everest, any of these, a huge endeavor. There's always a chance of injury or sickness. What are your contingencies in those cases?
Well, the purpose of this expedition, again, and our focus is on the humanitarian aspects, the global health program and the educational program. And regardless of what happens with the physical expedition, those two pieces will continue. And the global health piece is already a success with Dr. Shaw's hard work. The educational program is going to be a success. And so we're going to keep moving across these countries as best as we can. And if the unthinkable happens, if the worst happens, you know, we'll rely on teammates and we'll just keep moving. The purpose of this expedition is too important to be lost with every inch of this triathlon. Although those that know me know that I just don't stop. So I have every indication of finishing every last inch.
Brian from Cedar Rapids emails us with this comment. I have completed an Ironman try and it took me 16 hours, writes Brian, which I thought was a tough day. How do you plan to break apart the segments of the physical legs for the swim, the bike ride, and the run to Mount Everest?
Yeah, this expedition is roughly 100 times the length of an Ironman triathlon, but we have roughly a year to do it. So if you do the math on that, that means that every day we're doing about a third of an Ironman. So the swim days are probably the longest. In the Ironman, you swim 2.5 miles. The longest swim day I have will be at close to 30 miles. So that's a big day. The bike ride days break down. I'd say the average is 100 to 120 miles a day. The longest day on the bike is 154 miles, and I'll cross a mountain pass that's 17,600 feet. The most sensational day of the bike ride is crossing the Torogard Pass between Kyrgyzstan and China, and that's covered with a glacier. So I'll bicycle across a glacier at 18,300 feet and then descend the other side of the Himalayas into the Taklamakan Desert in China, which is a desert not unlike the Sahara, covered in sand, and then ride an 1,100-kilometer road with no services. The most sensational day on the run leg will certainly be that summit day on Mount Everest. So It's incremental. We break it down into doable days, but it's a lot of doable days, and they don't let up.
Let me turn to Kate for a minute, because Charlie's explaining this sort of in a matter-of-fact way, like we're going to go down to the park and spend an afternoon in the park climbing on some rocks there or something like that. Kate, now, we don't hear too much concern in Charlie's voice, if at all, about his physical well-being, his well-being. Kate, you as his wife must have some worries about Charlie's well-being. Well, share some of those.
Oh, absolutely. You know, he's I do worry about that. I worry about him getting sick. I worry about him getting hurt. But I also know I also see him training on a day-to-day basis, and I've seen him on his peak performance days, and I know that he is a very strong physical individual. But yes, I do worry, you know, and I also worry. One of my biggest concerns, though, too, is just, as we know, you know, bicycle riding, traffic. It's less the things that less. Right. Some of my worries are less his body, and more just the environment that he's going to be in.
Kate, what would Charlie be like if he were denied these adventures? You're probably the one who knows him better than anyone else. What would he be unbearable at home?
You know, no, he would not be unbearable at home. He is, honestly, he's, and the reason I married him is he is absolutely one of the happiest, most cheerful people I've ever met. He does literally wake up in the morning and say, "Today's going to be a great day." And that's fun to live with. But, you know, I do think, though, that when someone, people who do these types of adventures and who are natural athletes that do, you know, get a lot of their enjoyment out of life in pushing their body physically, and if you don't have, if those individuals like Charlie don't have a chance to test themselves, you know, they do feel like they're missing something out on something in life. And I do, you know, a huge part of my participation in this, and the reason I agreed to it is because I do think this is a lifelong dream, and it's something that, you know, if he doesn't have a chance to try it, you know, he will feel like he missed out on something, and I don't want that to happen.
Your son, James, is 2 years old.
Yes.
And Charlie, let me turn to you and ask, how has becoming a father changed your outlook on the future of our planet, on your mission here?
You know, at first when we had James, it was an immediate reaction to stop doing anything like this and to, you know, be around and to be focused on him and helping him achieve his dreams first. And then as time began to pass and Kitty and I just began to feel more overwhelmed with these stories of the challenges that are facing our planet. And we got a little bit depressed about that. And there were some mornings where I was waking up and I couldn't say it's going to be a great day today because I didn't feel like I was that sure. And we started to feel like almost like our kids' stories had already been written. And we just really rejected that idea. And so as a family, we started thinking of ways that we could try to make a more direct impact on our world. Mm-hmm. And we started thinking about nonprofits and projects that we want to take on sort of in the long term. And then, you know, 18 months ago, Katie was diagnosed with cancer. And it was this this moment in our lives where we realized that we couldn't take the future for granted, that if we waited to take on these things that we feel so strongly about, that we might not have that opportunity. And so kind of our plans for the future became more immediate and we're going now.
Mm. So would we look at the problems of our planet? We've got just a few minutes left. Give us a pep talk, because the youth, the adults, all of us on this planet are looking at disasters like we have unfolding in the Gulf. And feel pretty helpless, don't we?
Our kids just when you travel, and I know your listeners go everywhere, and when we travel, we find these incredible stories. And the problem is they don't get a lot of airtime. And so what we're trying to do is use this expedition as a platform to get that airtime. You know, we've designed what we think is going to be a sensational physical expedition. We want to take people's attention and turn it to something much more important. So that's why we're starting in the Thames. The Thames is this great, very inspirational story. I'm going to swim in a river that was so polluted that nobody could even get near it. And it's going to be this great story for our kids on what you can do, a small group of people can do. We finish on Mount Everest in a rhododendron forest, which is going to be one of the most spectacular things you've ever seen, Ben. And it was clear-cut 20 years ago by the people there because they had a tourism industry that they didn't think they could sustain. And the East and the West came together and they fixed it, and it is spectacular. And it was a small group of people, these monks at the base of Mount Everest, that did it. And so all the way along the expedition, these are the stories we're going to be sharing. And it's going to be uplifting and inspirational. And there's going to be tough times. And we're going to work together and we're going to overcome them. And I hope we come home with a new perspective. And our kids, James and his friends, and our friends' kids, they have that inspiration. And they have that drive to go and make a difference.
Do you see that you're creating, you're planting the seeds of long-standing relationships between, say, Iowa and Nepal? That 20, 30 years from now will be looked down upon as this is when a really great relationship started.
Well, we've got 60 Nepali families living in Des Moines now. And Bikal and I have served, I guess, as informal ambassadors. And this is a great place for immigrants to come. And we've worked really hard to get them here. And they love it. So the relationship's already there. Bikal, as soon as he got established here and started working a little bit, the first thing he wanted to do was start a foundation to help people that were still in Nepal. And so working together, we started a memorial foundation for the families of Sherpas who were killed climbing Mount Everest, and we've done a lot of work with that. So Bikal also started an educational foundation to provide services for young kids in Nepal to go to school in Nepal. So it's incredible, these folks that come over, and we just give them a little help to get started, and then the first thing they want to do is to extend that hand to friends that are still there. So the relationship is already there, and it will continue to grow.
You know, we can't all climb Mount Everest or swim the English Channel or go on a world triathlon, Charlie, but what advice do you have for someone who feels a little bit too much like they're stuck in a rut, a routine someone who wants to find a way to the thrill of an adventure and perhaps help the planet in the process.
No, no, no. See, that's all just a perspective. I mean, we have all had these types of Everest achievement, and it's just how we look at our lives. And I didn't start by climbing Mount Everest. I started by going to Hawkeye Point, which is a hog lot, and I was 1,400 feet above sea level, and that was the first summit, you know? And you just build from there, and you build step by step by step, and I'm not anybody special. You know, I've just done this through small steps, and that's what people need to do is just start.
Okay.
Now, if they want to get involved with our expedition, they can follow it online. You mentioned theworldtry.com. That's our website. We've got a new website that'll be up in the next couple of weeks. And so in the meantime, they can also go to Facebook and The World Try on Facebook. You can follow that. And Try, of course, is triathlon, T-R-I. So The World Try. We also have the chance for people to physically be part of this. We're hoping to take some folks from Iowa along with us to the base camp of Mount Everest. And it's a difficult hike. It's one that a lot of people can do. My dad came with me the last time I went, and he was 63 when he did it. And that'll be next spring. So
okay.
You can connect on Facebook and
okay,
check that
so,
out
and
as
we
well.
We can track your progress through theworldtry.com. And also,
yep.
We plan on checking back with you on the exchange at least a couple times during this 11-month expedition. And do you have any idea when we'll be checking back? We're trying to leave that up to you.
Where would as often as you like. We'll be in constant contact with our friends back home.
Okay. Well, exchange listeners, stay tuned for the next chapter in this great adventure, which will be launched 2 weeks from now. Charlie Whitmack will embark on the World Try, an unprecedented 12,000-mile, 11-month intercontinental triathlon. From the English Channel to Mount Everest. Charlie, Kate, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck on this expedition. We're all with you with our hearts
thanks
and
again,
our souls.
Ben. Thanks for having us.
All right. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins, Jeff Schmidt, Alex Hoyer, and Lindsay Moon. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. And we wanted to thank John Pemble in Des Moines. Podcasting and on-demand audio available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.